A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Yeah, you can laugh. I was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'd say it to your face, not say it to now.
I'm down to Anfield and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
Ireland and the Nations League, they don't exactly go together like horse and carriage, do they? That's 0 wins, 2 goals in 11 games as we begin our third campaign in the tournament, and there might not have been many more depressing performances than last Saturday's as we fell to a 1-0 defeat away to Armenia. Happy Bank Holiday Monday. Welcome to today's Second Captain's Football Podcast. Hello there, Ken.
Hello there, Garon.
My, you're sounding full of the joys of life today, and why wouldn't you, quite frankly? Because we'll hear from Richie Sadler and Gavin Cooney of the 42.ie in just a few minutes. But bloody hell, Ken, that was an annoying way to spend an afternoon. I mean, as a Manchester United fan who's watched quite a few weekend-ruining Man United games at roughly the same time that Ireland-Armenia kicked off on Saturday, I mean, the feeling wasn't entirely unfamiliar, but bloody annoying nevertheless.
Well...
They didn't even give us a chance to get the weekend underway, really.
Well, you see, this is because I think, again, you know, once again, we're forced to... An Ireland game has forced us to confront fundamental differences in personality type between me and you. You know, you're a guy who wants everything to be flowers and sunshine, fancy paper, nice
that
smells.
Is true. I mean, you've nailed me there. You have nailed
me. You know,
me
you're like, why can't we all just get along? You know, why can't everything... Why can't we have happy endings? Why can't we have enjoyable weekends? Whereas I'm a guy who...
Why can't we have enjoyable weekends is basically, that is me, to be fair. That's my brand.
That's, you're kind of a good time boy. whereas I've got a more nuanced, a more complex, in many ways, a deeper approach to life, how are you going to know that this flower smells good unless you've tunneled through the sewers,
shoveled your way through 500 yards of shit.
I feel as though experiences like last Saturday help to deepen and broaden my appreciation of the world. To watch Ireland's efforts to scramble a halfway promising angle for a cross into the packed Armenian penalty area is a kind of a basso profundo, a note by which all the other notes of life assume a new richness and a new distinctiveness. And a new quality of experience. So, that's what I'm saying. You know, you've got to take the rough with the smooth. In fact, if you haven't taken the rough, how do you even know what smooth is? And so that's what I'm saying.
Another amazing opportunity for enrichment. It was basically what you're talking about last Saturday was for coming at it from your angle.
Yes.
That you took so many learnings, so many life lessons from last Saturday.
I thank the Ireland team. I thank the Ireland team for what they did, for what they did out there. I mean, it was it a good result? You know, if we were to put you know, let's put on our conventional glasses. No, it wasn't. It wasn't a good result. You know, if it was it a good performance? You know, again, peering through the Coca-Cola bottle lenses of convention. Again, no. I think that, you know, conventionally speaking, a lot of people would say that was a bad result. But, you know, in this sort of interpretation of football, which I'm increasingly leaning towards, this was a life-enhancing result. It enhances all the aspects of life that aren't watching Ireland play. Everything else just seems a little better. Once you spend enough time with the Ireland team, you will suddenly find that everything else just, you know, you've just got a little bit of a spring in your step.
It really puts it all in perspective, doesn't it? You know, it really does. It does.
And that is
the function of the Ireland team.
You know, can we really ask any more? Can we ask any more of this team? So, you know, that's, yeah.
we have three more Irish international games, and if coming up in the next 10 days, 8 days, and if you like nothing more than hearing Ken and I getting angry and shouting at each other after Ireland games, as may well yet happen on today's show, then the Second Captain's World Service is for you. Join us for €5 a month plus VAT with no joining fee, no minimum contract. Give us a world for a month, and if you don't fancy it, you don't have to stick around. We think you will though, with tons of GA. An Irish tour to New Zealand coming up in the next few months, as well, of course, as the football. So for those of you who want to more visibly support the Second Captain's World Service, we have our super sexy Second Captain's jerseys also on sale on our website or on the O'Neill's website. They're probably, I don't know, Ken, the most delightful item of clothing we've ever produced and would make the ideal gift for the Second Captain's lover in your life. Anyway, those bits of housekeeping now duly taken care of. It's time for a post-Ireland spirit-crushing defeat report on sport with Kennedy.
That was more marketing than housekeeping, really, wasn't it?
I mean, yeah, maybe, actually, yeah. I mean, it's straight up marketing. I mean, you know, we're here for journalism, you know, so anything else is basically housekeeping. That's what I reckon.
Fair enough. The game was...
You bring the journalism, I'll bring the housekeeping. That's how this operates.
The game... Oh, God. I mean, I know what you're going to say, Ciarán. You know... I know what you're thinking, and I know what you're gonna say. Why don't you say it?
No, I don't know what you think I'm going to say.
Well, I mean, why don't you say?
If you think what I'm going to say is that was terrible. What the hell happened? Yeah. We can't. We're not allowed to lose 1-0 to countries like Armenia. Yeah. That's what you want me to say, isn't
that's,
it?
That's. I mean, that's what you believe.
That is basically what I believe.
It is.
I mean, yeah, I was going to, you know, couch it in slightly less strident terms, but I mean, that is the basic. Yeah,
I was thinking, how is it that we just don't seem to be able to make a chance here? Like, what is it? What are we doing wrong? Why is this happening? We have been through a spell of scoring some goals. You know, I mean, we've scored a few goals, 23 goals since the beginning of 2021. That's what Stephen Kenny has mentioned a few times. Sure, you know, maybe we scored 3 against Azerbaijan away and 4 against Qatar, and, you know, you add up then 3 against Luxembourg, and, you know, sure, it's not as though with the goals.
We have never been once to, you know, go too deep into the weeds in relation to where we got our goals or who scored.
Look, everyone runs up the score. You know, you think Man City score all their goals against, you know, Real Madrid? No. Au contraire.
You said it, Ken.
Au contraire, you know.
You said it.
So, although they did score 5 goals against Real Madrid, they scored more goals against Real Madrid than we scored against Azerbaijan. Okay, so we'll hand it to them. We'll hand it to Man City. So I watched all the goals to try to see what type of goal do we score? And usually, the type of goal that we score is a header from a cross. 9 out of 23 goals, is that
okay?
15 out of 23 goals come from crosses. Only 5 from set pieces. 2 out of 23 goals came from through balls. They were one of the ones against Luxembourg, and then the one against Qatar when Robinson slotted away the Hendrick through ball. You may recall.
Mm. Yes, I do.
Hendrick actually with the through ball on both occasions. And he tried to play a couple in the game against Armenia. But generally, this doesn't result in anything for us. It's if you want to score, you gotta cross. That's the way that Ireland score. And did we...
We did try quite a few of those.
It was 34 in the game. Mm. But can you remember a single good one?
Like, that is a better question.
Well, right. Stephen Kenny talked about wanting to see De Bruyne crosses. De Bruyne crosses. And you know, he meant something specific by that, which was crosses not... from the byline, you know, the typical...
In the corridor of uncertainty. Kevin.
Yeah, the sort of diagonal cross from the half space that Kevin De Bruyne is famous for doing. It's not just Kevin De Bruyne who hits those balls, but he is the world's finest exponent of that type of ball. And there's a couple of things about it. First of all, it's the area of the pitch from which it's actually hit. It's kind of... It's more, you know, it's outside the front of the penalty area to the right or to the left. You know, usually he's hitting it from the right because he's a right-footed player. And... then the area that they're aimed towards, kind of between the penalty spot and the far post. And the speed at which they're hit is the really distinctive thing about the Kevin De Bruyne cross, because he is a guy who does like to put a bit of pace on the ball. You know? Mm. He likes to give the attacking player a situation where the pace is already on the ball and all he's got to do is add direction, right? You know, that's what Kevin De Bruyne likes to do. He likes to provide that service for his forward players. And altogether, I think it's a very admirable thing that Kevin De Bruyne is doing. And it's something I'd love to see Ireland doing. And it's something Stephen Kenny would love to see Ireland doing. And it's something that Ireland are not doing. They really are not doing this. When there are chances to put balls into the area like that, you know, I can think of Tadic sort of put a ball in like that against us when Mitrovic scored against us. Do you remember Mitrovic's header in the 3-2 game against Serbia? That, you know, this is sort of what we're looking for, this type of thing. But we don't, we actually don't do this. Whether it's because when we get into the right position, we put in a ball which is too high and loopy that nobody can attack really with any you know, real intent, or whether it's that we just don't try to play the cross from the right area, or we sometimes overhit. There was an overhit one which Collins that was the one where it was a free kick in the middle of the pitch and Cullen rolled it to Stevens, who's got all the space in the world. He's probably a bit too far out really for this type of ball, but it's the type of situation you can see that they're going for, that he's from. It's the same sort of angle. What does he do? He kicks it basically over everyone in the penalty area. Even Collins, who is a big man, is backpedaling and jumping, and the ball comes off the top of his head. Yeah. And, you know,
I have a concern about, you know, us building a game plan around something that, you know, recalls the name Kevin De Bruyne. You know, if there was like a Tom Cleverley cross. Jordan Henderson
does the same thing. Are you telling me that Jordan Henderson represents some unattainable standard of technical ability? I mean, Kevin De Bruyne clearly does. Okay, yes. Kevin De Bruyne is.
I'd be more comfortable with if we could get a few more Jordan Henderson crosses in there. Even Jordan Henderson, I would be a lot more comfortable.
Jordan Henderson like, crosses.
We'd love some Robert Lewandowski finishes as well, but that's not something that's available to us at the moment.
Well, this is what, you know, this is ultimately what it's about. Like, people talk about creativity and, you know, oh, we don't have a Houlihan, or, you know, we don't. He's the most recent sort of obviously very skillful and inventive player that Ireland have had. You know, we've had these types of players on occasion in the past. But you actually don't need a player like that to create chances in a game. You just need to have a couple of players who can work together and to create a good position to put a cross into the box. It's literally what Liverpool have been doing for 5 or 6 years. You know, Hendo, Jordan Henderson, has been like one of their main sort of... you know, okay, they've had Alexander Arnold, who's maybe got a higher ball striking ability, you know, but, you know, Henderson has been one of the main players of this. It can be done. You don't need to have like a magic player who's able to just open things up just because he sees everything differently. You just need to have a couple of players who are able to work together in a, you know, intelligently in triangles to make these sorts of angles. But we can't do that. And it was really grim watching us try and do this, especially after going behind, when there was just, you know, the we did manage to put in a number of crosses, but I keep seeing Ogbene having to come back, who's at this point on the right, having to sort of cut back onto his left foot and cross it in using his, you know,
his weaker foot.
His weaker foot, because this is the best it's the best that he can make in the situation. You know what I mean? It's, you know, they're not letting him cross on his right, and his teammates aren't giving him another another option. So, I mean, there was players, Ireland knew kind of, they had an idea of what it was they were supposed to do, but they just weren't able to execute it. You know, this sort of triangular play that by which you can make an angle to cross. You know, you saw guys almost following each other around. You know, just, oh no. So it was a real breakdown. It is a different type of frustration from what we've had before, because, you know, typically we didn't dominate the ball to the extent that we have been doing in these more recent disappointing results. I mean, when I said,
yeah, I am going to say that, it was extremely depressing watching it on Saturday, but at least Armenia didn't boss the game. they probably deserved the win. I mean, we didn't do enough to deserve the draw or a win for us, but like, at least Armenia didn't like school us in football while they were beating us, which I have seen happen to Martin O'Neill teams and Trapattoni teams over the course of the last 10 years.
Well, then Georgia sort of bossed us that time under O'Neill, which was kind of a grim one. But you know, I mean, it's like, you know, when you've got enough of the ball and you still can't figure out what to do with it, that it almost makes it worse. And then you're sort of looking at it going, oh no, like, I mean, is this, are we going to just have to accept that we can't do this? Is that where we're at? Like, are we going to have to try to figure out a way to create situations in the game where we have space to attack? If we're unable to, when we are really dominant in a game like this, we can't do anything. You know, like we really struggle to create any kind of a chance. Like we just don't know how, we just can't figure out how to do it. Are we going to have to try to engineer a game where we don't dominate as much, where it's more end to end? Maybe that's, and then I realize I've just reinvented Trapattoni ball. Oh wow! You know, did you ever see that movie Frank?
Yes.
There's a scene in it where he's like a songwriter, and he's going around and he's got this like little ear where he's got a little song in his head. And
his killer hook.
It's a killer, and then he realizes, oh, I've just, it's like, I don't know, what's the most famous song you've ever heard of? Like, you know, he's just written Common People or something. And I realized, oh, you know,
you've just that's talked yourself around to, yeah.
I've talked myself into Mourinho. I'm like, oh, we need to create space in front of our formation. I'm like, oh God. it's a bit of an impasse that we found ourselves in. I mean, you know, we still need to, obviously we're gonna persevere with what we've been doing. Obviously this isn't the time to sort of hurl it all out the window, bathwater, baby, bath, everything. You know, we're not gonna
bathroom.
Do that.
Yeah. Bath, just, you know, burn the entire bathroom.
Break up
down.
The tiles and start throwing them out. No. We still believe that we can go somewhere with this. You know, it's just when you've got the sort of chemistry that our team had started to show. You know, when they sort of have to spend such a long time away from each other, it's difficult to kind of to click straight back in, right? I mean, is that a thing? You know, they need to click back in. Look.
Okay. yeah. We're no one's feeling that positive about the whole thing this morning, but we will talk to Richie and Gavin in a couple of minutes. I mean, there is the question of the Nations League generally, Ken.
Yeah.
Some people.
Well, I mean, the players hate the Nations League. You know, I mean, it. But which players
should,
right?
We? Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly.
The Belgians. The Belgians. They hate them. Anthony Barry's Belgium, right? They lost 4-1 to the Netherlands, and they hate the Nations League.
I mean, Barry can't buy a win in the Nations League. You know,
he's winless. He is a Nations League jinx. Anthony Barry. Actually, he wasn't involved in any Nations League games with us, was he, Anthony Barry? They were all before he arrived. Yeah. So that was his Nations League.
He's still 0-1 maiden. Though. Yeah,
yeah, but so they hate the Nations League. You know, I think England hate the Nations League. I mean, they lost to Hungary. And I mean, it is it's crazy, really, that the players at the end of their season, which most of them are now having to play 4 international games. You know, it's like, what? Like, that's longer than most teams would be involved in a tournament You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like that longer average number of games than most teams in a tournament would have to play. So it's nuts. And for what? Like, you know, for what? But that's the case strictly, I think, for the top teams and top players. Yeah. These are the people.
I mean, they're top seeded anyway in these groups. There's not a whole pile going, you know, and they're going to qualify regardless. So you can see why they. I mean, we should really like the Nations League. Like,
because it's a rare chance.
None of our players are flayed to within an inch of their lives by the time June comes around.
This is a chance for them to play a football game, you know. So for a lot of players, you know, it's been, you know, Robinson kind of dropped out of his club team. Hendrick obviously has played, I think, fewer than 10 matches all season. I mean, if you count, you know, in terms of minutes, he's played 10 matches, less than 10 matches worth. Duffy, you know, has been out of his club team for quite a while. So, you know, I can't imagine that, like, Nations League resentment is a problem for Ireland. You know, I mean, I'm sure people would also like to have holidays at some point in their lives. But yeah, it's for us, the Nations League should be delivering more than it is, I feel. You know, it hasn't gone so well.
There was a match between Nations League friends of the past and of the future yesterday. Wales have qualified for their first World Cup since John Charles and all that in 1958.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It is actually pretty amazing when you think 64 years. Oh my God, that's a long
64
time.
64 years, yeah, it's crazy. It is amazing. And Dan Roberts, I saw tweeting about this. Wales are now ranked below the Faroe Islands in 112th place in the FIFA rankings, which is to say 20 places below Armenia. Is it time for Wales to admit they'll never qualify for a major tournament and to pool resources for England and Scotland? Talk Sport, 27th of July, 2011. Actually, when I look at it, Bale was already the reigning PFA player of the year in 2011 when Talk Sport had this debate in that summer. And Bale really is the guy who has made this happen. I mean, he's clearly not the only guy. Wales have had some other pretty useful players, and they've had, you know, a great sort of team ethic and obviously a really the thing.
Yada yada. It was it's all Gareth Bale.
Well, when you're watching the, you know, the sort of scenes of communion at the end, you know, everyone's singing and that old folk singer guy, and everyone is weeping and singing. I mean, this is beautiful. I mean, this is what football is all about. But I don't think any of it would have been possible without Gareth Bale, who essentially was a superhero for a lot of this period. He isn't anymore. He has his superpowers, his dwindling superpowers, still extend to being able to absolutely smash a free kick in such a way as to create panic so that Yarmolenko, you know, heads it into his own goal. I mean, I don't know if you give that goal to Bale. I mean, I guess it's technically on target, so yeah, but like, it's clearly a Yarmolenko own goal for me, because the goalkeeper is going to, well, maybe it's just going to burn a hole through the goalkeeper's chest. But you know, Bale, maybe there's a couple of points here. First of all, Bale's aura, or the memory of Bale, still is enough to elevate Wales above a lot of international teams. And secondly, TalkSport should have realized that a team that has a player like this actually is always going to have a chance in international football. You know, that's the sort of, this is what obviously what Ireland are lacking. And some teams are lucky enough to have I mean, I'm not saying it's without this, you can't possibly do anything, but it does help to have a player who's just better than everyone else in international football. And you do still, this still does happen. If you saw the game between Norway and Sweden, it was in Sweden, a neighborly Nations League clash, which was won 2-0 by Norway. It sounds, Murphy, though, you don't know anything about the game, but if you were to hazard a guess as the player who scored the couple of goals for Norway, you know, who would be the first guess?
Well, you know, what you want me to say is Erling Haaland.
Well, Erling Haaland is the right answer. Who obviously, it's never simple.
By the way, I didn't say anything. That doesn't mean that I don't know anything.
No,
you know,
but
you just presume there that by my silence.
Well, it just sounded as though.
I was just gathering my thoughts.
But you weren't. You didn't want to be like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, I saw that you were just. I seen. But look, I'm not expecting you to
I didn't want to throw you off
watching,
your stride. That's all.
To sit watching Sweden against Norway. Erling Haaland, played in this game. He scored a penalty and then he scored again in the second half. Norway scored a kind of goal you wouldn't see Ireland scoring, because it was they had Egil Olsen, old Drillo, you know, their old long ball coach from the the sort of 90s. You also remember he was briefly at Wimbledon and didn't go very well. But it was goalkeeper, goal kick, boom, 70 yards, flick on. Haaland destroys the defender and smashes it in. And of course, being Haaland, he then turns around to the other defender and goes, yeah, into his face, right? And everyone's like, oh, jeez, what was that? And then he explains after the game, this defender, Alexander Milosevic of Sweden, Haaland's account of what happened was, first he called me a whore, which, by the way, I am not, says Haaland. Then he said he was going to break my legs. A minute and a half later, I scored. That was fine. That was damn fine. I think it was more
He didn't say damn fine, did he?
Well, he used the word fint, which means fine. And I'm just going to say he said it was damn fine. I mean, that's what he meant. Okay. So this is the way it is with Haaland. You know, he scores and then he rubs your nose in it because apparently you've been trying to wind him up, and you should never do. Some of his Norwegian teammates are saying, oh, I've tried that with him in training, and I would never do it. You know, it just gives him energy. It gives him power when you call him a whore or, you know, say you're going to break him. He then scores on you, and then he goes, into your face. Milosevic says none of this happened. I wouldn't have said that. He says, I never called him a whore. I don't speak Norwegian. I don't understand it. I don't know if he speaks Swedish. He says, I speak English. It's interesting that he says things which I didn't say. Super interesting. But what happened on the pitch stays there. I'll move on. They then said, is Erling Haaland the best player you've ever played against? And he said, no. But is he nearly the best player? And Mosvich said, no. So, you know, it's a little bit.
I mean,
bit
what
of,
the hell else is he going to say when he's been accused of
calling him a whore?
Name calling. Yeah.
Maybe he's not in the mood to be gracious with his compliments for Erling Haaland's footballing ability, but certainly he was withholding them one way or the other. However, whatever it is Haaland is doing, even if he doesn't get high ratings from critics like Alexander Milosevic, he certainly seems to be able to bang in quite a lot of goals. And so so even if he's doing it in an ugly, raw way, there is something about it which remains oddly compelling. And I do wonder if ever we ourselves will have a... you know, maybe Evan Ferguson is the new is the Irish Haaland. Maybe it's Mipo Odabeko, who is going to be playing tonight, I imagine. Well, this evening, Atala. This is if just in case the Ireland game had depressed you a little bit too much. It's always nice to
there
look
was
at
our under-21s. Yes, yeah,
it's nice
on
to look
Friday
at,
evening. Very good.
Yeah, and you're scoring three goals. Smallbone scored two. Odabeko scored the other. Also assisted Smallbone with a great little flick into his path for the first goal, which Kenny Cunningham in commentary seemed to think was unintentional.
And Alan Cawley and Richie Sadler.
But why all did they all think it was unintentional?
All of them made a point of saying it was unintentional. I was like, well, maybe it was, but there is a chance that he meant to do exactly that. Yeah. And, you know, Mullinoiga agus Chucky Sheed.
Yeah,
Ken. You know, that would be my. I mean, if there's a 10% chance he meant it, let's just go with he meant it.
What about the finish when he ran onto that ball and just hammered it past the goalkeeper early in the manner of Daniel Sturridge? Was that unintentional as well? Or
this is what I'm talking about, Ken. You know.
You know, hit a really early finish like that, and the goalkeeper doesn't even dive. It's like, wow. So look, all I'm saying is, this is all. Highly promising. They're Ireland under-21s, just as they've been for us. They're a beacon for us. And they have been when Stephen Kenny was managing them. They aren't. They still are now under Jim Crawford. So that's at 5 p.m. If you want to check that out, and maybe it will be better news than the senior team. Although, as we said, you know, we still got a few games to go. This ain't over yet. So, but this section of the podcast is over. Timbuktu. Yo, listen
up. Here's the story. They're all pumped. That lives in a blue world. We haven't got leaders. All day and all night, and everything he sees is just blue. They're all just headphones. Inside and outside, blue. They don't communicate.
You can't get anything out of them.
That's why we're no good.
Timbuktu.
They're all just headphones.
They don't communicate on the pitch. They don't communicate off the pitch.
They're all pampered.
Oh, we're getting ready for Russia. Good luck.
He ain't got no
And then after that, we'll be building a team for Timbuktu.
Timbuktu.
How have England reacted to that equaliser?
Perfectly. No panic. Calm straight down. Continue dominating the game, playing and staying in Iceland's hearts. It's been the perfect response. You'd think that no problem.
England were up after 4 minutes. And they still lost.
Maggie Thatcher, your guys took a hell of a beating.
Maggie Thatcher, your boys took a hell of a beating.
The only thing that they have got is the big boy up front, Sigurdsson, who really, Sigurdsson.
Oh, my word.
Oh.
Tell us, talk us through that, Steve. I think we know what's happened.
Oh, just say, Sigurdsson.
He just cannot.
Well, we were all certainly hoping this chat was going to be more fun than it will be, but nevertheless, we have Richie Sadler with us. Richie, how are you?
Morning, Murph. How are you getting on?
I'm good. And Gavin Cooney of the 42 is with us as well. Hey, Gavin, how are you?
Hey, Murph.
Well, Richie, what happened? This seems like the worst result in a while. You know, we had a big lead in. You know, we a lot of hopes, a lot of dreams for this Nations League competition, and we still played really badly and lost to a screamer from 30 yards out, as is by now our tradition.
I had allowed myself get quite hopeful and optimistic before this game at the weekend. I'd watched Scotland last week. I wasn't really impressed by them and heard Kieran Canning in the pod last week kind of rip them apart. I thought, well, they're beatable. And we're going to play Ukraine a few days after. They're either going to find out that they're going or not going to the World Cup. Surely that's a slight advantage for us in terms of timing. And I did what all players advised not to do. I completely forgot about the next opponent and I didn't take things one game at a time. I assumed Armenia would be a result that we would get, not particularly comfortably, I didn't expect, but I thought we would and should win a game like that. And reflecting on the performance, it's not an unfair result. It's not a result that the Armenians didn't deserve. And there are lots of times you can lose a game and point to patterns of play or phases of the game or things you did or the things the referee didn't do or belter of a performance by the keeper. We have little or nothing to point to from the weekend to say that we didn't deserve the result that we got. So yeah, very low start to a campaign, which in my head at least potentially could have delivered something.
Well, Gavin, did you share those assumptions that Richie made?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the positivity was well-founded. Ireland had come into this game having lost, what was it, one game in nine, and that was the Ronaldo show in Faro. There was a kind of an upward trend of progress, maybe, if you accept that home game against Azerbaijan, but there are issues in that game and also issues, obviously, in that defeat to Luxembourg, which reared its head again, again in Yerevan, and it's really, it was a very dispiriting result for Ireland and quite a damaging one, you have to say, for the manager.
Yeah, I just wonder, Gavin, if your thinking about the game was influenced at all by you know, your experience of actually being there. I just wondered how it was in Yerevan this time. It's like 12 years since Ireland were there last, but now it seems to be a kind of a pretty unstable situation there. I mean, they recently lost the war. I heard Darren Maloney saying commentary that the FAI had sent a security team to check on the political situation before the game, which sounded quite unusual. What can you tell us about that aspect of it?
Yeah, there is an element of the FAI sending out a security team of the Skibbereen Eagle keeping an eye on the Tsar of Russia. There wasn't too many open signs of upheaval or turmoil on the city streets, we have to say. We were braced for having read things, and obviously this came up at a pre-match, one of the football press conferences, which was certainly when I realised that there was something I probably had to start Googling. But there was no real sign of too much upheaval on the streets. There was a gathering, there was a fairly large gathering on the Friday evening in the city centre. Our hotel was just beside it. There was maybe, now, wasn't a huge protest by any means, maybe a few thousand that gathered and marched down a street beyond our hotel. The protests have been kind of whipped up by opposition leaders in a bid to topple the current prime minister. The Armenia and Azerbaijan have been in conflict over the Nagorno-Karabakh region, which just to bring it back from a very a very personal point of view, led to a few questions of passport control over the stamps that we had in our passport.
Like having been to Azerbaijan, just squirting.
So we were like, no, football. And they took our time letting us through, but they let us through. So the opposition leaders are starting this protest movement to try and topple the Prime Minister over allegedly conceding too much in the peace negotiations with Azerbaijan, which Vladimir Putin and Russia are the guarantors. But there's maybe they had turned a little bit violent in recent weeks. We were told and we read ahead of this, and in where protesters had broken into some government buildings. So there was a slightly, I don't know, pregnant air around the place when we came back from the pre-match press conference back into the city on Friday evening, when there was thousands corralled around that main city square and riot police with shields just standing guard around the entrances to the various government buildings dotted around the city centre. But that all went ahead without any real incident or any real incident that that spilled into the city centre anyway.
So the conditions generally, the sort of conditions and atmosphere didn't seem like a huge influence or an unusual influence on the game to you?
Well, certainly not the political situation. And as regards the heat, we talked a lot about the heat and the build-up. The players were insistent that it wouldn't be an excuse. And I'm not sure really that it was. It was hot before kickoff. I think it was 33 degrees, 34 degrees at pitch level. But with about 30 minutes before the game kicked off, the sun was kind of smothered with cloud and the temperature did drop a little bit. It was still warm and still not ideal situations, but you know, it was in Orlando. The players weren't talked about it, would refuse to use it as an excuse ahead of the game. And in fairness, Kenny referred to it as a factor, but there was no one hiding behind that excuse post-game.
Yeah, I mean, one of the Armenians was down with cramp, I think, in 59 minutes. So it was two teams who were affected by it.
And if anyone was affected. The Armenians are really old. You know, they're the highest average age of any squad across the 55 nations that competed in the World Cup qualifiers. So, you know, okay, they're used to the heat, but they're weary aging. They have a load of weary and aging limbs. So Ireland really shouldn't be clinging to that as an excuse.
Yeah, Richie, what do you think is going on here? I mean, we have got a game plan which is all about dominating the ball, and whenever we do, we don't win. We don't know what to do with the ball.
Yeah, I think this is one of those games which can show up the limitations of analysing a game based on statistics that are available. I think at one point, maybe towards the end of the first half, did Darren Maloney call out a stat that Ireland had 69% of the ball or 200 and something passes? I forget what it was, and you kind of think, well, what this is good, but if you actually watch the game and analyse what we did with the ball, I think Ogbeni afterwards used the phrase that ball speed, I think, needed to be better. It was, I'm trying to picture myself being in the Armenian mindset of any of the defenders at any point in the game, or particularly at half time. Do you know, when the opposition has the ball, you think, well, they're going to present a load of dilemmas. There's lots of unpredictable things. Or when each attacking move of the opposition breaks down, whether they, you know, shoot wide or a keeper saves it or goes out for a throw, you see pictures of players looking at each other with their hands out going, lads, give me a hand here. What do I do? Because they're facing fullbacks which are overlapping or underlapping, or midfielders which are entering into areas they didn't suspect, or really clever moving from front players. We were just predictable and we were kind of slow. And a passing game works well if it's done with purpose and at a particular speed. But a passing game by the players that we have played at the pace we played it at is not going to cause many problems at all. And we were up against a team which didn't have many ambitions to go forward in the first half at all, really. And so we're always going to have more of the ball. We were always going to have territorial advantage. We were always going to probably create more chances. But the quality of our play, I'm not giving any player a free pass because they haven't played in 4, 5, 6 weeks. But that the beginning of the game played as out as if we were a group of players that were sluggish and sloppy and off the pace that they would expect of themselves or that we've seen of them previously. Because we were poor to begin with. I think Collins gave the ball away sloppily a couple of times, and Duffy and one or two others. You just think, okay, we need to up this, we need to improve this. And even actually at half time, first half wasn't great, but I often find myself, you assess a first half and it's slightly tinted by your expectation of what you're about to see in the second half. So I did that thing at halftime, which a lot of people do when you watch a game. You kind of go, okay, that wasn't great, but we're going to build on this slow passing game with actually a bit more clinical play or a bit more energy, or there might be actual goal scoring chances created and the opposition will kind of begin to fade, and we will do what we did maybe against Luxembourg. We'll get one and then more will follow. But the second half started even worse than the first half and it didn't pick up. So it was really, really disappointing. You could make a case for some of the players, like Tripart didn't have a good game. He hasn't played in a month and his last game was the really, really disappointing defeat in playoffs with the MK Dons. So assume privately he's decisions to make about his career. He's maybe unsure where his club football is next season. There are others as well. Collins has just been relegated. Coleman finished on a high with Everton, but that's probably the most emotionally draining end to any season he's ever had. But they've had a month to kind of process all of those things and get over it, if any of these things are an issue with any of the players I've just mentioned. Of course, we don't know how the players have spent the last few weeks, whether they've been in kind of taken over minding their fitness, whether they've switched off, which would be understandable. We played like a group of players who haven't played together in a long, long time, which is really, really disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, that issue that you mentioned of the slow pace of play is not something of which the, you know, coaching staff is unaware. I mean, Gavin, if you recall the time when, after Stephen Kenny had signed his contract, he brought the journalists into the tactics room. And I mean, the so-called tactics room, where we watched basically a bunch of goals that Ireland had scored and some chances that they'd created and so on, if they looked like being a goal. It was pretty positive stuff, I guess. That was one of the things he mentioned, actually, injecting pace into moves. And John Egan, I think he highlighted as a player whose passing often did this. You know, he showed Egan, you know, hitting a ball first time forward and it's sort of and suddenly the move was moving at a different speed. I remember Troy Parrott did something on the wing at one point where he dropped the shoulder. You know, he looked like he was going to pass it back across and he sort of dropped the shoulder and darted up the line. And I thought, this is an example of one of the moments that's happening. And I honestly, I'm racking my brain and I can't think of any other moments like that in the game. I just can't. Why do you think Ireland are failing to do this? I mean, everyone knows what it is that we want and somehow we seem unable to produce it.
It's very strange, isn't it? I did also think of that John Egan moment against Azerbaijan and the pace of the passing, because I bet it was very interesting afterwards talking about how the ball speed was too slow. He also used an interesting word in that there was some complacency in it. You know, it's as if, like, you know, the job here is to have the ball, we're doing our job here, and they do kind of forget that it's about scoring a goal. You could see there were a couple of rehearsed moves in the first half that did almost work off. There was a definite attempt to get Ogbeni in behind the left side of their, as it turned out to be, a back five, but there was so little space to do it that Ireland struggled. But there was some good movement where, you know, where Ogbeni switched over to the left, Parrott and Robinson dropped off, and then Ogbeni managed to create some space with a kind of an arcing diagonal run in behind. That only happened once, I think. That didn't happen enough. And then there was a couple of moves in the first half where Hendrick threaded a ball through for Robinson and then Ogbeni, who squared it to each other in differing moves. And Robinson had that one that was hooked. Maybe it was off the line. And then Ogbeni pulled another one really tamely wide of the far post. And that was about it, you know. So there were some rehearsed moves in the first half. There probably wasn't enough of them. Kenny also spoke afterwards about lacking width. And, you know, this maybe raised the deeper question of whether the old three at the back is needed in every game Ireland play, particularly against what we would perceive as the group's fodder, because Ireland needed a lot more than from the wing backs than they got. Seamus Coleman physically struggled throughout the game, I thought, quite a lot. He didn't, you know, he didn't get up and down that wing as Matt Doherty can, and he's also a different player to Doherty. Like, Doherty's, I think there's a case to be made that Doherty's the most important player in that Irish team, particularly if they play that system. He takes up really clever positions, sometimes wide, but often infield, coming in off that right wing, where he links well with Hendrick, and so there was an instance of that in the 3-0 win away to Luxembourg. So he was a big miss. So you could ask, why are you playing the system if you don't have Doherty in it? And then Stevens again looked slow. And okay, he's been battling back from injury and hasn't played a whole lot of minutes either. he looked kind of slow on the left at left wing back as well. There was a couple of times where he got to the byline and pulled it back, and Ireland created half chances that were blocked. You think, keep doing that and one will break for them, because Armenia were so eager to rush back. There was, you know, they were often like very close to their own goal line. You just had to keep your composure, pull the ball back, and the chance would be there. But Ireland really didn't do that often enough. And, you know, I'm kind of caught between, do Ireland need a different approach here? Like, is there another plan needed? And then thinking, well, actually, maybe if the players could keep their heads and stick to the plan, maybe things would be better. Because the most lamentable part of the performance was the last 15 minutes after they went a goal down. It's just panic stations. You know, they're booting like really low percentage crosses into the penalty area. There was like, I think the most damning fact of the game was the fact that after Ireland went a goal down, they had one attempt. That was a John Egan header and went wide. Yeah. It wasn't even on target. Like, that's so poor. And it was the same against, in the home game against Azerbaijan. Okay, one of those crosses went in off Shane Duffy's head as per. But just the panic. And like, there was no sense. Okay, there was obviously jubilation on the ground when Armenia won. That game meant a lot to them on a couple of levels. But there was no sense that they were clinging on. And I really felt like, you know, they could have played an hour of stoppage time. Ireland weren't going to score.
Just on the crossing issue, Richie, I think this is quite interesting. Just how bad Ireland's crosses were in the game, like for the entire game. Now, this is other things that Kenny talked about that time when he was sort of going through the tactics or the goals really with the journalists. There was a couple of things he mentioned. One of them was that the wing backs in this system are actually encouraged to play on the inside. So he showed a couple of moves where, you know, you had players like Doherty or Coleman or, you know, whoever it was, rather than, you know, this idea of going down the outside, which kind of people, I suppose, traditionally think of wingbacks or fullbacks doing. He's saying, now look, you know, here we can see they've kind of moved to the inside channel, or like the winger in front of them is in the outside channel now. So you don't have players in the same lane. You know, this is the idea. You know, if one player is outside, then the one behind him is inside. This sort of thinking, but definitely that idea of the wingbacks aren't really supposed to be going around the back of the defense. Let's say, this seemed watching the game to. I mean, I kind of was thinking we are quite kind of a narrow and congested team here. Like, we're not actually creating a lot from this. Did you get the impression that the sort of play in wide areas was letting us down?
Yeah, well, the quality of the crossing certainly was poor. There was not much space behind the Armenians because they sat so deep. So everything we did, we kind of had to do in front of them. And like, moments of creativity or quick passing or clever movement or even things done at a really high pace were so, like, I've all my notes here in front of me at the game, and there's nothing jumping out of me at all. And like it was all just so flat. Like, so you can talk about the lack of sharpness of the players or no game time. If complacency is an issue, so their mindset, as Benny touched on, is a problem. The ball speed was an issue. Like, I agree with Gav, like the goalkeeper didn't have to make a save after we went a goal down against Armenia for 15 minutes. I think in attack we were just fairly disjointed. Troy didn't individually bring much to it at all. And even though the others, Benny and Robinson, switched a couple of times, we didn't cause problems. And for a manager, and I think this is what's important, like for a manager who has for so long talked about the things that he's talked about, we know what they are, like whether it's passing, playing a different way, get people to look at us differently, like win games differently as an Irish team. His post-match comments actually about being stumped that they went to a different defensive formation than they were expected to.
Did he say he was stumped?
Not stumped, sorry. That's my word. He said at one point, you know, he was
definitely surprised because he said they'd played like 20 games, 4-2. They never played with 5. But they did lose their last game 9-0. So maybe they were thinking about changing after that.
Yeah, I know. Like he did say, you know, we've analysed the last 20 games and they've played this way bar once, and So on the flip, on one side, you go, great, don't we have a managerial set up here who are, you know, very well prepared and they analyse everything, and, you know, that's exactly what we want. Previous managers haven't done that. But then again, that we seemed so short of ideas or short of a responses to Armenians setting out the way that they did, because like, can you imagine the their discussions at halftime? The Armenian coach did mention this afterwards. He said that at halftime, he said to the players, like, there's a different way for us to play here in the second half. So I think he gave the Armenian version of, you know, lads, we're giving them way too much respect here. If we get at them, there's a bit of joy to be had. Similar like Dyche said about Lampard's Everton that time. So I don't know if this lot know how to see this through, because that's what our performance was screaming. It's just like, we went out with the idea, let's keep it. Everyone knows what positions they're in. We might have been surprised by how Armenians are set up, but collectively, we've no idea what to do here. We haven't got that thing that a team has. Like, this is what I meant a moment ago when I said at halftime, I thought maybe this is okay, because the slow, ponderous stuff in the first half, you could reframe that as, well, this is, you know, game management. It's apparently really hot out there. They haven't played in a month, and you can't be explosive and dynamic for 90 minutes. So there's going to be a dynamic, explosive 5-10 minute spell. Maybe at the start of the second half, we're going to come out and really, really light the place up. But we were just waiting. It was just always, we were watching, waiting. And the players looked as if they were just waiting for one another to do something. And we got what we deserved, which was nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling, Gavin, that the team actually, you know, despite this sort of year of improvement, 2021, which, I mean, okay, and the earlier results this year, maybe continuing that trend a little bit, this team is not yet confident, really. They don't really have confidence. I mean, you know, there was maybe the Nathan Collins mistake early on conditions that a little bit. Like, it's you know, Collins, when you look at his stats, was actually the best Irish passer in the game. You know, he touched the ball more than anyone. He had the best passing percentage, pass completion of anyone, apart from Kelleher, who actually had 100%, which is incredible for an Irish goalkeeper, really. But the fact that he just made that mistake early does sort of maybe put the team on the back foot a little bit. I mean, this happens to the best teams. You know, I saw Luka Modric after the Champions League final say that, in his opinion, the key moment was the offside goal that Real Madrid scored, after which Liverpool lost all their confidence. They suddenly kind of thought, oh my God, what if we make a mistake? And I kind of get the feeling with this team that this sort of improvement trajectory they've been on sort of hasn't really embedded itself in them as real confidence. But, you know, this sort of slow and ponderous, careful play, you know, where they're sort of, oh, you know, do we want to give the ball away? The immediate panic after conceding a goal, where they just sort of start lashing balls in, you know, in the hope of getting someone's head on it. Like, they sort of abandoned the whole plan as soon as they came under real pressure. All of this suggests a team that actually, underneath it all, is still really fragile.
And sorry, maybe just as a corollary of that, Gavin, like, how difficult is it to, when you're not playing at club level? I mean, you know, like, you can kind of have these run of results, but, you know, it's easier for us to forget about the fact that Jeff Hendrick played, like, you know, 60 minutes of club football between the last Ireland game and this Ireland game. So whatever confidence you can build, you know, as an Irish team, you're still an Irish player playing very little club minutes. Like, you know, maybe that is the explanation for what Ken's talking about.
I think that your point, Murph, manifested itself physically as much as anything else. Like, Jeff Hendrick was good. I thought Jeff Hendrick was arguably Ireland's best player in the first half. Like, if anyone was going to find the pass to get through that Armenian defence, it was going to be Hendrick. But he just wilted completely in the second half. I think he's played 69 minutes at club level since the end of March, since Ireland's last game. On the confidence thing, I think that's a very good point. I mean, and there was an offside goal in this game as well, and Ireland didn't react to it. You know, it was obviously offside. The right wing back was miles offside, but because the flag goes up late, it changes the emotional energy in the ground. But Ireland didn't react like a team that had a bullet whiz past their shoulder. They just played worse, you know, and Kenny didn't make a sub, I think, for another 10 minutes after that. Abafemi came on and was really disappointing. But if you think logically about, like, why would Ireland have any confidence that they can go to Armenia and win? Because the pattern is thus, and the pattern has been the same for under previous Irish managers as well, in that, you know, give us a ball in a yard of grass, give us enough space against an opponent that'll leave us it, and they've proven to be a good counter-attacking team that can also cause trouble on set pieces. But there's no proof that Ireland can break down these teams that ask them to be the protagonist and sit deep. when there's an early goal, it settles everything, you know, like 3-0 away to Azerbaijan. But like, I mean, in the last year, since Ireland started playing as three at the back, you know, that's the eureka moment, and that's what changed everything going into 2021. Ireland's the three games in which Ireland have had the highest share of possession and the highest number of passes was Luxembourg at home, Azerbaijan at home, and Armenia away, in which Ireland have lost two and drawn one. And I think Kenny is the first Irish manager to ever lose two games to sides outside the top 90 in the world. So this is a recurring problem. And I don't know, like, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but like, the pre-match press conference was a lot more interesting than we expected it to be, because...
Oh my God, I couldn't believe
it. We had a sit down with Kenny in the team hotel the day before for, you know, 20-25 minutes. He was very generous with his time and his thoughts. And we came away thinking, yeah, that was good, but... what do we talk about in the pre-match press conference? Because it's effectively just us. As it turns out, a couple of Armenian journalists turned up to talk about their polished grievances from the Euro 2012 qualifier 11 years ago. But then there was very...
Well, they weren't the only ones with historic grievances.
They were a very, very tame question about, do you want to get the monkey off your back in your first UEFA Nations League win? And Kenny went off on one about talking about how unfairly they were judged in the Nations League in 2020. Went back talking about the 2 metre physical distancing rules that cost Aaron Connolly and Adam Eder their position in the qualifier in Bratislava. And you're thinking, well, yeah, but you know, you've won that argument. That's ancient history, you know. And I wonder, like, is that a kind of fragility of confidence? And I don't know. It definitely suggests
that, Gavin. I mean, you know, when Richie, what did you make of the comments? I mean, this is before the game, and it did sort of stick out to me as well. I was like, why is he talking about this? Like, and what is he trying to tell us here? That wasn't terrible? That really was terrible. It was terrible, but everyone sort of accepted that there were reasons why that happened. You know, all those the sort of things that he was mentioning. But like, it's happened. You know, it's time to move on. Don't kind of come back to us and say, well, actually, that record wasn't as bad as people say. And people really came. I was just thinking, this is one of the most pointless things I've heard him say in a long time.
Yeah, pointless is a word I thought of as well. I mean, we were saying things like, you know, the analysis of that tournament doesn't count, and I don't accept what was being said, and people were out to get us, and all that stuff. And there's one of the things that actually was impressed by Stephen during the times when things were difficult. He was very firm in his belief that things would go well, and sometimes he'd give interviews which he'd describe as kind of bullish. Like, he'd be confident, he'd be determined, and... He'd sound as if he's going to stick to his principles and he's got this. And that's exactly the kind of impression you want to give out at a time when things aren't going well. But to say what he said in that scenario at this time before this game, it just... I'd be kind of sitting here where I'm going, is this... That doesn't portray like confidence or belief. It's like, it's kind of like it's some lingering little insecurity or fragility, I think is the word you used, that he's still trying to rewrite a story which has been told many, many, many times, but we've all moved on from. So I think he did himself a favour by just kind of just knocking all that in the head and just
concentrate on winning winning a game.
It's so irrelevant. That stuff now is so irrelevant. And for him to be the one leading it, like, it wasn't like he was...
Yeah, he wasn't like, asked about that. I mean, exactly. The question sort of implied it, but it was Martin O'Neill also failed to win a game in the Nations League. You know, it wasn't like, oh, you know, you haven't done it. It was like... Sorry, Gavin.
If you're in a press conference in a room and you've somebody hammering away at you on a particular issue, fair enough, you've got to deal with it. Or if the press are going on for weeks about it, you have to address it. But this was none of those things. This seemed to be something that... he is still really, really thinks strongly about and feels like he's got stuff to get off his chest, and he's still trying to influence people's thinking about that time. Yeah. We just think, forget about it. Your job is too important and too big now to be going on like that.
It's a slightly over-exaggerated thing for me to say, but it struck me as someone who's kind of more comfortable campaigning than governing. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Like, he's won the argument. Like, he won, like, he delivered the 80-seat majority. And now he's got to go on and, you know, and do the job. And, like, the Armenia game was the very first step on the road to qualification for Euro 2024. The UEFA Nations League is of a piece with that qualification campaign. And it was a It was a dud. I mean, and it wasn't like an aberrant dud. It was the continuation of a trend we've seen under previous Irish managers, and that has continued under him, that that hasn't been addressed, is the struggle to break down teams who sit deep. And to talk about that, and to talk about being surprised by them setting up to a back five, well, this is the problem with evolution in football. Like, you get better, but everyone realizes you get better. So you've got to get better again. Like, it's a very difficult job. But
well, on that point then, on that point, the question of change of system, he's already done it once. And, you know, broadly, I think it's been a successful move. Maybe now there are some flaws, becoming apparent, you know, in everything we've been talking about, particularly in games such as Armenia. And, you know, we have struggled in these types of situations. Are you now in the camp that says, well, we need to change the system again? And from Stephen Kenny's point of view, it's not just a tactical question. It's kind of a political question now, too. Like, you know, if you change your system again, does that look bold and innovative or confused and weak?
I think you should forget about the political implications. He's got a contract extension. He's got the job until at least the Euros campaign. So he needs to maximize. Well,
okay, I mean, he doesn't need to, for the time being, he doesn't need to worry about the contract situation or say the battle of public opinion, right? I mean, although he does seem to worry about it a little bit, judging by his comments. But just in terms of how his own players say, that's an audience that he does need to impress and take with him. You know, if hypothetically he was to say, lads, you know, we're going back to 4-3-3 or, you know, something like this, do you think people would be like, hang on a second, we were just learning? Like, do you think you have to stick with a system like this regardless of the flaws, or is it okay to change? Should we say yes, of course, all managers change the basic style of play from time to time?
I think there has to be some change, and the example of how change is can work was seen by the Republic of Ireland under Stephen Kenny 1 year ago, because that change of system did work massively. They changed to a back three. They modified how they play. They're a lot more direct, or vertical is probably the more acceptable use of the phrase in football circles now. Kenny was asked after the game whether he was going to change the system. He said, no, we have to get better at what we're doing. And in one way you find, okay, that's, you know, this is a principal guy, that's quite admirable. I mean, I've been on this podcast and elsewhere criticising previous Irish managers for not having a plan. So I have thought about, would it sound very churlish of me to criticise, oh, this guy's sticking too much to the plan.
This guy's plan is getting in the way.
get a new plan. But like you did, I just kind of realised it as you were talking earlier on, he did say there are nuances we can improve within the system. One of them is surely get more width into the team. Like, if you want the wing backs coming inside, it would seem logical to me that you have left and right footers outside them. I mean, there were so many bottlenecks in the centre of the pitch against
Armenia. Yeah, this is what Guardiola does when he has his players come inside. I mean, okay, we're not Guardiola or whatever, but, you know, he plays Raheem Sterling on the right wing or whatever, you know, if he's going to have players doing that. And we weren't doing that, certainly on our left side.
Yeah, like Steve, he wants Stevens to come in field, but like, you know, Troy Parrott is right footed. He was coming in field trying to be kind of a pseudo number 10 as well, and he was struggling. But there was just so many bodies around him, and Hendrick was trying to thread the ball through the eye of a needle, and Coleman was coming in field a bit and didn't have quite the pace to get to the byline, particularly as the game wore on. Ogbeni was spending so much time with his back to goal. Like, every time Ogbeni was receiving the ball with his back to goal was another small triumph for Armenia. Like, I mean, that's not where he's dangerous. So there are probably nuances within it, but again, like, there's now the trend of, you know, Ireland have struggled against Luxembourg, against Azerbaijan, against Armenia. Do you really need a back three in those games? Because you mentioned earlier on that Nathan Collins was Ireland's best passer. It was very easy for Nathan Collins to be Ireland's best passer, and the top pass combination was Collins to Shane Duffy, and Armenia would take that all day because it's not going to cause them any problems. So you do wonder, okay, Ireland don't have a number good, like a really crafty number 10 that can prize open these teams as some of Kenny's club teams might have had in the past. But you do wonder, do we really need three centre-backs in these games? Or do we need three centre-backs in the 95th minute against these teams? Because Kenny has always talked with a slight air of bafflement as to how Rotherham used Chidozie Ogbeni as a right wing-back. He says, we always see him as a forward. Yet the end of that game saw Chidozie Ogbeni as a right wing-back. So that felt to me like, here's this guy prioritising the system over what he often believes is best. So I think that needs some thought on his part.
So what do you...
That issue, sorry, go on. That issue, Kent, sorry, about it being a political consideration now, that Stephen might in his mind somewhere think that there's going to be a bit of pushback against or criticism on him if he changes it. I've been saying this for ages. I think being versatile and adaptable and slightly unpredictable, all those things are a strength of a coach. Mm. Like if I'm playing against a team and if there's a bit of a doubt as to how they're going to line up, or I'm playing against a manager and I'm unsure as to what he's going to ask his players to do, I think that's a sign of a good manager. And I think that there's a couple of areas here. One is, let's say against Ukraine or Scotland, probably won't happen, but let's say it does, he changes the formation. I don't expect he will. How we react publicly is one thing. Like I'll be saying there, well, okay, yeah, Ukraine are going to present very, very different challenges and scenarios than an Armenia team will. So it stands to reason that you might explore different ways of playing against that. Right. Mm. Completely logical, really rational, nothing too fancy about that. But then the internal reaction, I think, is a key one. Like you said there, Ken, how will the dressing room respond? Because, and where I'm thinking here is, if privately, if Stephen or the coaching staff have kind of openly in conversation around coaching, you know, left it open to, well, this is how we're playing at the moment, but, you know, it can change because we've players that can play in different ways and we're going to play against opponents that play in different ways. So it's just common sense. But for the moment, we're doing this. Well, then a change of formation won't really sound that drastic. But if he privately has said, we're rigidly, this is our answer, this is what we do, and we've landed on a formation and blah, 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 blah. And then there's a change, or there's a change before a game, like Wednesdays or next Saturdays, and it's on the back of one or two poor performances. Then it can be interpreted within the dressing room as, okay, this is starting to feel like shaky ground.
Yeah, I don't...
We're not dealing with a manager here who has a single focus. We're dealing with a fellow who, on the back of a couple of bad results, has done the thing he said he'd never do.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know if he's you know, made a blood oath never to change back from 3-5-2 or whatever. He always played a back four before this, you know, and he said that he changed his... He decided it had to change after that England game. You know, I mean, this is something we've talked about before, so there's no need to go back over all this. But... You know, I mean, I'm sure if he's changed once, he could change. But the question surely is, every manager maybe is going to change various aspects or various emphases of what the team is doing in any given game. But something as basic as, do we defend with a back four or a back three? Those sorts of questions are usually settled. There actually aren't too many managers who kind of switch freely between those two systems, are there?
Armenia, maybe.
Well, Armenia had been consistent back four up tonight. I mean, you know, we're always talking about international football. I mean, Guardiola does it a little bit, I suppose. But we're always talking about international football. You know, you can't really coach the players that much. There's not that much time to work on stuff. Surely the question of, do we defend with a four or a three or a five, has to be the kind of thing that's settled.
Yeah, and look, at the moment it is settled. I mean, he has definitely settled it in favour of a back three. And as I said, he said he's not going to change it. So he will look to improve. You know, plan B is to make plan A better, etc. And there won't be... There's another three games left between now and Wednesday week.
Which could change everything that we're talking about here. We could regret this sort of dreary tone of this conversation completely with 3 wins.
Yeah, there's three games between now and next Tuesday.
Yeah.
But happily the news cycle will have forgotten all of this by tomorrow. Look, he's not going to change within this window. It's whether he goes away and in the long... layoff until next September decides that something needs to change. He won't change it now, but you know, just the trend of struggling against these lower ranked sides is established now, and it's been a back three for it all. And you can look at, oh, we've been undone by three screamers, like what more can we do? They're like, yeah, that is aberrant, but what is the trend is that those goals have always been decisive, because Ireland are not scoring enough goals and they're not creating enough chances either. I mean, you know, there was an initial lament about Ireland not taking their chances in Armenia. We're really struggling to think of the chances that they didn't take beyond the slight flurry at the end of the first half. There was nothing in the second. You know, I mean, a couple of Shane Duffy headers and set pieces that went wider were easily dealt with. So there'll be no change now as to whether in September, approaching September, when Ireland play Armenia at home, whether Armenia will presumably be even more defensive. does there need to be a change in approach then? That will be questions for then. But it's three of the back for the next week, I'd say anyway.
We'll be talking to you again, Richie, on Thursday morning. But for now, Rich, Gavin, thanks a million for talking to us this morning.
Cheers.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Here's lads.
I'm having a buzz floating around. Anyone wants to knock, give me a shell.
6 million ways to die. Choose one.
I don't like the name him because, you know, I actually think he's a very good writer. But it was daft. This was a dig at football people who know the game. Using statistics to try and undermine people who have eyes, ears and common sense.
What I'm saying is that sometimes the eyes and ears mislead you. The ears, particularly if it's Paul Merson talking to him, might mislead you.
This was a dig at football people who know the game.
You know the balls in the stones.
Have a proper debate. I'd love to debate him. You could sell tickets for that.
All I have to back it up are facts. All I have to back it up is the factual record of what took place.
Bring it on. This was a dig at football people who know the game. He's the one who's on the attack, don't forget. And has been for some time without naming people. He mentioned pundits. Well, who are the football pundits?
I think they call that on a verbal broadside.
You've been on the attack, Ken, but you just don't have what it takes to name names.
You don't have the balls, Ken. You don't have the stones.
Don't have the balls.
I don't want to put them down, but they seem to want to prove that you don't need to know anything about football to write about it. This was a dig at football people who know the game.
You don't have the balls, Ken. You don't have the stones.
Okay, that's pretty much it from us, Ken. Do you feel any better about our chances of a morale-boosting win over Ukraine on Wednesday night?
Not really.
Talking about our problems should be beneficial, should be therapeutic, no?
Yeah, I mean, usually you think, well, Ukraine have lost that game against Wales, which is a million times bigger than the Ireland game, and they're not really going to care about the Ireland game. But I wouldn't like to make any kind of assumptions about the spirit and the attitude of the Ukrainian team at the moment. They're obviously in a different position, a kind of a crazy position. These games mean a lot, and I'm sure that they'll...
Let's not be banking on that.
No, the usual assumptions obviously don't apply.
Well, here's some therapy for the soul.
Good, clean fun with Pat Kenny.
I should be on Paj and Raj.
Yeah, we were sent this short clip from David Lynn, and it's just Pat Kenny doing Pat Kenny things.
We talked before about monkeypox, and if you're of a particular age, you will have had a smallpox vaccine.
I mean,
and
therefore you're fine. Funny. But for those, you know, it's just.
I don't know why you played.
Nah, I mean, come on. It's just, you know, cheap laughs. You know,
had a smallcock. Yeah.
It's not really my style. I mean, I was strong-armed into playing it. So, I mean, I apologize.
It's the kind of stuff that comes in from scum.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. We'll be back tomorrow with some coverage of a wild weekend of hurling. The Handshake Part 2, a classic Munster hurling final. Total insanity. All a lot of fun. Gurmagut Kenna Joaquin.
August Gurmagut Akira.
Okay. August by Miller Asherish. Amorik Sloan. August Bannock.
But Alan, please. Sorry, I'm sorry, Alan. Alan, look, don't treat me like a fool.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off. They never go home. Those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all.
It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.